Okay, good evening everyone. We're broadcasting live, hopefully, November 12th, 2015. Trying out something new here. So, just a word. Tomorrow we have a special event with the Buddhism Association, so I won't be broadcasting tomorrow. That is cancelled. And then Saturday is a big day as well. But Saturday broadcast should go ahead as planned. I mean, just an ordinary broadcast. But we're skipping a Dhammapada. So the next Dhammapada will be Monday. Suppose we could do a Dhammapada on Saturday, but I think we'll just skip it. Well, which means we have to wait for this extra special next one. The next one's extra special. I don't know how this new mic is working out. Hopefully it's okay. So tonight we will take questions, if anyone has any questions.
The mic sounds fine, Bhante. It's just picking up a little bit of noise from, I think, just rustling around a little bit. But it sounds good.
Okay. I won't rustle.
You have to sit very quiet there. So I have sort of a question. A friend of mine, and I think she's watching, if she is, hi Sally. A friend of mine had asked if her daughter could attend a Buddhist service with me. And while that would have been great, I would have really enjoyed bringing her. There was only one and she didn't have the availability on that day. And it's for a homework assignment. So I was wondering if you could talk in general about the idea of her homework assignment was to attend service that was something outside of her own religion. It's for a religion education class. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what Buddhist services involve, what the requirements are, or the expectations for followers of Buddhism. It's considerably different from, say, a Christian perspective with a real requirement to be there weekly and so forth.
Well, maybe you can talk about it. I'm not sure exactly what the idea is. We don't have any requirements in Buddhism. We teach cause and effect. If you do this, this will happen. So we have theories and claims about reality, but we don't have many obligations on people. We have some shoulds, but they're more or less conditional. Like, if you want this, then you should do this. If you want to be happy, then you should be a good person, for example. But there was never any sense of a institution in Buddhism, except for the monastic institution, which is a whole other thing, but that's actually still quite practical. So I'm not sure quite what I can talk about.
Well, I mean, that's a big part of it, that there is no actual requirement, you know, to attend on a regular basis, but people still do go to monasteries and temples, you know, when they want to, I guess.
Yeah, they go to find teachers, no? They go to the monastery to find a monk, because you figure that a monk is a good choice for a teacher. Most likely has something good to teach. And then you build up a relationship, and so then you have, and you know that they have something good to teach. And so you go back, and maybe you ask them questions and get advice and clarify teachings and that kind of thing.
But there's also the upasatha.
Sorry, I'm rustling. Also what?
The upasatha.
Right. Yeah, so there is something. There's this... people ask the Buddha how they should keep the holy days. Because in India there was a tradition of keeping the lunar cycle as a holy day. So they would take the 8th day and the 15th day. As if you know, the moon goes in a cycle of 30 days, approximately. And so every 15 days you get a new, every 15 days you get a lunar cycle. After 15 days you get the new moon, and then another 15 days you get the full moon. And then halfway in between you get the half moon. So they had 4 holy days in India that people kind of, whatever teaching they followed, that was kind of a day that they considered to be holy. It was a special day. And so the Buddha said that people should keep them by taking the 8 precepts, because that's the kind of thing an arahant lived by. And so it was a way of mimicking or emulating the arahants on those days, by keeping the 8 precepts, which is not killing, not stealing, not having any sexual or romantic activity, not lying, not taking drugs or alcohol, not sleeping on luxurious beds. Sorry, not eat. I'm a bit tired. Not eating outside of the wrong time. Not wearing beautification or engaging in entertainment, and not sleeping on luxurious beds. And they might also take it as an opportunity to practice meditation more so than the rest of the week.
So rather than being, you know, weekly on a Sunday, it would vary based on the moon cycles. And
they didn't have a solar week back then. Solar week? How do you call it? They didn't have a 7-day week the way we have it.
Lunar week? Or would it be solar week?
I don't know what we call ours, but they didn't have what we have. They had a lunar week. So a fortnight would be based on the lunar cycle.
Thank you, Bhante. Another question. What does an animal have to do to be born as a human?
You have to keep the 5 precepts. Mainly. I mean, it's how something is born as something else is, if you know anything about karma, there's no science. I mean, there's no easy way to pinpoint it. It's like asking, what happens, what do you have to do to create an earthquake? What do you have to do to create a tornado? It's highly complex. Nobody knows how to predict tornadoes or even earthquakes, because it's very complex. But how to predict where someone's going to be born is far more complex. So there's a lot of, I mean, it comes down to the last moment, what their mind is like in the last moment. But if they're not keeping 5 precepts, it's very difficult for them to be born as human. It comes down to that last moment.
That would be extremely difficult for an animal that was a carnivore, I would think.
Yep. I mean, it's not a matter of being difficult, because they wouldn't have any idea of it either. They wouldn't have any idea, oh, let me be born as a human being. For the most part, they would be very happy living as they were and breeding with other, mating with other animals of their species and being born again and again as the same type of animal. Be very rare, not a very common thing, or it would not be common to have the cause to be born as a human. About the quote, right? We have a quote. Is our quote any of any interest?
It is just as if a man traveling in a forest should come across an ancient road, an ancient path traversed by people in former times. Proceeding along it, he comes to an ancient city, an old royal citadel lived in by people in former times, with parks and graves, oak groves, water tanks and walls, a truly delightful place. Don't suppose that this man should tell of his discovery to the king or royal minister, saying, "Sire, you should know that I have discovered an ancient city. You should restore that place." Then suppose that ancient city was restored, so that it became prosperous, flourishing, populous, and was filled with folk, and it grew and expanded. In the same way, I have seen an ancient road, an ancient path, traversed by the fully enlightened Buddhas of former times. And what is that path? It is the Noble Eightfold Path.
And as a result, he cleared the path and led people down the path to the great city. And many people followed him and entered into the great city and dwelt therein. A nice way of putting it. The idea of the practice being a path, no, is very important. That the idea that we are going somewhere to a destination we've never been, and so the idea of needing a guide is important to be clear on. People who think they can just find the way themselves have to think of a person who's never been down a path and never been to the destination. How would they know when they're getting closer? How would they know when they're on the right path? For the most part, they wouldn't, and they'd very easily get off the path, fall onto the wrong path. So having a guide is important. I bring this up to people sometimes when they talk about just trying to figure things out themselves, find their own way. And there's no reason to think you should be able to find your own way. It's quite a gamble. And like a path, it's something that you have to travel, you have to do. There's no, it's not just going to come to you. You're not just going to sit still for a while and enlightenment is going to hit you in the back of the head. You have to walk the path. If you don't walk the path, you'll never reach the goal.
Pante, would you just explain briefly what the Eightfold Path is? I don't know that my friend understands, you know, what that is.
You tell me.
Well, it's...
And I'll correct you.
Okay, that sounds good then. It's what Buddhists try to do, living through their daily life, 8 different areas where you try to be very mindful and to work towards just being better in each area. The first being to have the right intentions.
Right view is the first one.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Right view is the first one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so right view, so understanding what the teachings are, and right intentions, not having greed or anger or delusion as your motivation, having the right motivation. Right action.
Speech first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I always get them in the wrong order. Right speech. You know, not being harsh with people, not lying or spreading rumors or saying the wrong thing, saying mean things, right action, not killing people, or sexual misconduct. That's a big one. Not stealing, things like that. Right livelihood. There are certain jobs that Buddhists shouldn't have, jobs that involve killing or selling poisons, and jobs that involve harm to beings. So anything that would involve killing, like being a butcher or a fisherman or selling poisons, and I think there are some other ones, and anything that would involve, you know, human trafficking or slavery or anything like that. Then after right livelihood, right concentration.
Effort.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right effort. Right concentration, which is...
Mindfulness.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really making a mess of this.
Concentration is the last one.
Okay. So right effort, just putting a proper, wholesome effort into learning and practicing all of this. I'm sorry, I forgot the one after effort.
Again. Right effort, then right mindfulness.
Then right mindfulness, being mindful of what you're doing. Right concentration, which is involved with meditation.
And then?
I'm sorry, just because I'm on the spot, I'm totally forgetting everything.
What's after right concentration?
Well, it's the one dealing with insight, but right mindfulness.
No, actually, that was a trick question. Right concentration's number 8.
Okay.
So you got 8, that was 8. But actually, after right concentration comes Sammanyana, which is number 9, which is right knowledge, which is to get it, to see the truth, and to understand that which allows you to let go, to see, to know the truth, that nothing is worth clinging to, just having this epiphany, not really an epiphany, but this conclusion that comes from the observation of reality. And after Sammanyana is Sammanimutti, is right freedom, right liberation. So having seen the truth, you are freed from the shackles of delusion. It means you don't cling to things anymore. You don't do things that cause yourself harm. Don't do things that create suffering.
Thank you, Bhante.
Well, thank you.
I think I need to practice up on my Eightfold Path.
Good.
I have read about unconscious beings, asana-sata, from one of the realms of existence. Do we know much about these beings?
I don't know much about those beings. I think some people do, but they are a bit of a mystery. Like my teacher said, there has to be knowledge, some awareness or something. He figures there has to be something. Asanisatta means they don't have any mind. But he said there has to be mind. I mean, I'm befuddled as well. If there's no mind, how it can continue on? I mean, the Abhidhamma scholars will tell you it's because of this or that, but practically speaking, it doesn't make much sense.
Would that be different than a person who's unconscious in a human realm, just, for example, being in a coma or something?
Yeah, I don't know what a coma's like, but I think it's supposed to be different. I mean, it's being born without a mind. That's the idea. But it doesn't say, asanya means non-percipient, or not aware of anything. So maybe it's being born without senses. It's a Brahma realm, I think. It's considered to be one of the Brahma realms.
How does right view differ from right knowledge?
Robin, how does right view differ from right knowledge? Right knowledge. Right view Well, if you get technical, all of the eightfold path factors together, when they are perfect, that is right knowledge. So, the ninth one is just a way of saying, talking about that moment when they come together, and when your view becomes knowledge. So up until that point, it's kind of becoming clearer to you that that's the case, but at the moment that it becomes knowledge, that's samanyana. I mean, it's the Buddha teaching, right? This is, many of the Buddha's teachings are teachings. They're meant to teach you. So the person listening is supposed to learn something. It's not meant to be, you know, putting things in putting pegs in holes, or it's not meant to be theoretical. So there's a license being taken here, but that's what it means when the Eightfold Path Factors become, when you practice the Eightfold Path Factors, when they become mature, then there's the moment of samanyana. And with right knowledge, then there's right freedom. So it's not actually different. Except that when, you could say when right view has the other seven path factors together and they're all purified, then when they're all perfect, then there is samanyana.
Bhante, may you speak on the stillness in the practice of meditation. Thank you.
It's called pasadhi. It's one of the potential defilements of insight, because people who become still get attached to the stillness and think that they've attained something special, and they follow it. They think that's the path. And since it's not the path, they get off the path. So when you're still, you should acknowledge to yourself, still, still, or quiet, quiet. It's not a bad thing, but it's something that can get in the way of seeing clearly if you're not mindful of it.
So tomorrow is the campfire at McMaster?
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Buddhist campfire. Yeah, maybe we'll have someone take pictures. We should.
Yeah.
Someone should take pictures.
If you can take pictures in the dark.
If you have a good camera, you can. Yeah. So is that it for our questions?
We are all caught up on questions.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for coming out. Thanks, Robin, for your help and for your teachings.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you for straightening me out.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.